The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should consider obtaining independent advice before making any financial decisions.
Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garum Perro columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers Podcast. We're shifting our focus today from WA to the mineral riches of Brazil, where ASX-listed Centaurus Metals has been active for more than a decade, initially in the iron ore space and now in the nickel sulphide space, all for the battery revolution, of course. The company trades under the ticker CTM, or Charlie Tango Mike, and it last traded at 75 cents for a market cap of 245 million. The stock went through a share consolidation earlier this year, but by Garum Perro's reckoning, it's up probably fivefold for the year to date. Now, juniors can only ever get away a share consolidation if they have a quality project on their hands, one with serious near-term development potential and one geared to a commodity expected to outperform in the years ahead. Centaurus has that with its Jaguar nickel sulphide project in Brazil's minerals-rich Carajás region. It acquired the project from Brazil's mining heavyweight Vale last year and has since gone on to confirm a maiden resource estimate of more than 500,000 tonnes of nickel. In this market, only BHP has a bigger resource base. So Centaurus has started to command the attention of investors as it sets about completing a scoping study as well as continuing to grow the size of the resource. Aspirationally, at least, Centaurus reckons Jaguar has the makings of a 200,000 tonne per annum nickel sulphide production capability. That sort of production would command valuation metrics at multiples of Centaurus's current market cap. So needless to say, Darren and his team are flat chat making it all happen. There's a lot to talk about, including where the group's long-held Jambrero iron ore project is in these times of boom-time iron ore prices. So with that, I'm going to welcome Darren to the podcast. Hola, Darren, and thanks for your time today.
Hey, how are you, Barry? Great to be here.
Apologies for my schoolboy Portuguese there. Well, thanks for your time today, mate. So if we could start out just to fill in for some of the listeners, tell us a bit about your professional background, how long you've been with the company, and what your Portuguese is like by now.
My Portuguese should really be better than what it is after spending sort of 12 years in Brazil, back and forward all the time. But I have a background in finance and accounting, started life as a chartered accountant and sort of worked on a lot of mining clients, progressed through and joined Jindalby Metals as CFO there. Spent about 9 years there and then sort of made the transition sort of 2008, 2009 into the CEO MD role with what was Glengarry then. We were able to merge with Centaurus Resources. And as you alluded to, we were sort of started life in Brazil with iron ore and made a really good fist of a pretty neat project before we got the headwinds of 2014-15. So I think that the time in Brazil early on has sort of put us in good stead and really got us to the position where we were able to do this deal with Vale on the nickel project. I don't think it would have happened without sort of that history in Brazil and sort of showing the proof of work, I guess.
Well, remaining faithful to the country for what, more than 10 years, while others have dipped in and out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a very real thing over there. You've got to build relationships. You've got to show that you're genuine in your efforts to get a project up and running. And as I touched on, you know, the iron ore project was one that we took through to being development ready. And I think that work has sort of been seen by Vale as really important and, you know, enabled us to structure the deal with them the way that we did, predominantly back-ended consideration and royalties. Now, they wouldn't be doing that if they didn't think that we could get this project up into production.
Sure. Just before we jump into Jaguar, it might be best just to get what the position with the Jambrero iron ore project is, given iron ore prices are off the scale at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an interesting one. We've always had the issue that it with the project that it needed an offtake to be able to get to production. It was predominantly a domestic market supply situation. Now, with prices where they are today, that's a little bit different, but you've still got to go out and get the project financed. Probably only needs about $30 million to get it up and running. So we still have conversations. There's things that are happening in the background, but you know we have evolved, and we've got a a base that's so focused on the nickel because it's such a great project. But at the same time, I'm still very much pushing to try to get some sort of value adding step going with the iron ore project.
Right. Okay. Now, Jaguar. Talk us through Jaguar's history under Vale before Centaurus's arrival, and the JORC, or what we'd call a stock exchange compliant resource, put out by Centaurus in April this year.
Yeah, so look, I mean, Jaguar was a project that was sitting in Vale's portfolio for a number of years. They did most of their drilling between 2006 and 2010. They had a non-JORC resource attaching to that, but it was never really in the public domain as such. And it was through Roger Fitzharding, our ops manager, and our geologist in Brazil that we're aware of the project. And you know, we were able to approach Vale about it. So I guess what we did when we acquired the project, it had about 55,000 meters of Vale drilling, and we set about doing the drilling that we needed to do to get the resource up to JORC standards, and that happened in June this year. So we added about 10,000 meters of diamond drilling on top of the 55,000 meters that Vale had drilled, and we're able to put together this very significant resource of sort of over 500,000 tons of contained metal.
Right. And I understand, importantly, 80% is of that resource is less than 200 meters deep.
Yeah, look, this is the deposit here is quite unique. It's high-grade mineralisation relatively close to surface. As it stands at the moment, we do have a large portion of that sitting in the top 200 metres. We think that that's going to make this project very amenable to open-pit mining operations. And I think what that fundamentally means for us and our shareholders is that we should have a relatively low operating cost environment to be able to get this project up and running. We're not going to have to get into underground activity straight away, but we do think that there's definitely underground potential as we drill deeper into the project.
Mm. Is there any high-grade components to the ore body that might kick you off with a starter pit?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think broadly, we looked at this when we first picked it up as being a high-grade project. So Vale, we're looking at this as a big, broad system, probably average lower grades. But there was a number of high-grade zones which we saw in their drilling, which we've followed up and we've closed in, and now we've been able to wrap our own resources around that. I think we've got a high-grade component of our resource, which is sort of a bit over 20 million tonnes at sort of 1.5% nickel for a bit over 300,000 tonnes. So with that, we've been able to sort of hone in on where those high-grade zones are. And more recently, we've had some really good success in a part of the deposit or part of the project called Jaguar Central, where we've found this sort of, shallow plunging high-grade chute sitting within the broader mineralisation. And that for us, I think, will be quite interesting. When we did the resource back in June, we only had, I think, 4 drill holes of our own on top of the Vale drilling into that, which still allowed us to put a resource there. But we think that resource will grow with the drilling that we've done over the last 6 months in the area.
Right. So currently you're drilling away, are you?
Absolutely, yep. We've got 5 rigs on site, 4 diamond rigs and 1 RC rig. I think most of the drilling at the moment has been on sort of some infill work, and that infill work's all designed to get a larger portion of our resource up from inferred to indicated, and that will then allow us to be able to put scoping study numbers into the market early next year. We've got another rig that's sort of doing step out holes, and I think the mineralization that we sort of saw visually and reported into the market last week was a function of that sort of step out drilling, so that's been good. And then we've got an RC rig working on some regional targets out in the western portion of the tenement. And, you know, that's obviously greenfields type work, early days, but hopefully we can start to generate some new targets and some new deposits with that work.
Okay. You well funded for this program?
Yeah, we've probably still got about $25 million. We completed an equity raise back in July, and that funding will see us through, you know, all the drilling we need to do. We've got, I think, about 75,000 metres of drilling planned through to the end of 2021. As I said, that's a function of infill, it's extensional, it's step out, it's doing some sort of regional greenfields work. There's some geotech drilling in there that, you know, for project help define the project. Combining that with scoping study and pre-feasibility study work, you know, we're well placed to fund all of that through to the end of next year.
Okay. Historically, at least, that was a big raise by the company. I was just wondering, was there a change, a complexion of the share register with that raise?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think as you alluded to right at the start, you know, this is a project that's in the right thematic right now. People are starting to pay a lot more attention. The register is evolving from being sort of retail high net worth to a little bit more institutionalized. And, you know, obviously that's good for everyone because we've had a nice re-rate in our valuation. But yeah, the raise really did sort of allow us to bring in a number of new investors. I guess one of the big ones of those that cornerstone the raise was a group called Dundee Goodman Merchant Partners out of Toronto. Very well regarded sort of resource investors, do a lot of technical DD before they actually invest. So that's given us a lot of confidence in the project as well to have groups like that sitting behind us.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I keep mentioning the nickel sulfide aspect of the project as distinct from, say, MPI out of Indonesia. Just tell me what's the importance of having a nickel sulfide project as this electric vehicle storage of renewable energy thematic in batteries pans out?
Yeah, look, I mean, if you're trying to supply class one nickel into the EV market, you pretty much need to source that from sulfide projects or from laterite projects that then need a HPAL process, so high pressure acid leach. I guess the big difference between all of that is that high pressure acid leach is very expensive from a capital intensity perspective. You know, a sulfide project's probably, you know, at least one-tenth of the cost from a capital point of view compared to some of these laterite projects for the same level of production. Mm. You know, with that, we have a sulfide project that is, you know, relatively high grade in the scheme of things. So I think this is going to hold us in really good position, put us at a point where we're aiming to be producing by the middle of this decade, which is, you know, what we think will be a real kick up in the whole EV market.
Just reading this morning, actually, Macquarie's just substantially upgraded their EV penetration figures. It seems to be on in a big way. You got a Tesla in the garage yourself?
Not yet.
Well, you're like me, still driving the Kia, are you?
Mazda in my case there, Barry, but it's definitely happening. You're seeing it, but I think it will be that whole thing about market penetration, being able to get the price of these vehicles down a little bit. Hopefully governments can do a bit more work from, you know, subsidising that, particularly in Australia. You see that in other countries. You're definitely seeing over in Europe, there's a massive push to convert the internal combustion engine factories into EV factories and be able to transition their whole car industry. So I think it's definitely on, and we're really at the start of it. But, you know, I think people are quickly catching up that it's something that they've got to be investing in.
Right. Now, the scoping study nowadays, unfortunately, there's not a lot that can be reported from internal scoping studies, but just run us through this aspirational target you've put out there, this 20,000 tonne sort of production target from, you know, the middle of the decade sort of thing.
Yeah, look, I mean, I guess the way that we've looked at it is we've got a resource, we know the scale of that resource, we know where we want to be heading, and we know when we want to be getting there. So for us, it's been about trying to give the market a sense of the scale of the project, or at least the potential of the scale of the project. And, you know, 20,000 tons of recovered nickel metal is a globally significant project. It's going to take a lot of work to get there, but that for us is a really good target to have. The guys are working really hard to achieve that. So yeah, I mean, scoping study wise, we are doing a lot of work around that right now, and we should be in a position where first quarter next year we can put the scoping study detail into the market, because we should have sufficient indicated resource to be able to support the production forecasts and meet all of our ASX requirements.
And when you say first quarter, that's calendar year, first quarter?
Yeah, March quarter? Yeah, correct. So the March quarter next year. We've got an active program going on now where we're trying to do a resource upgrade and get that out by the end of January. We are then looking to be completing the scoping study sort of late Feb, early March, and sort of been reporting in that, definitely in that March quarter.
One thing that's interested me with the project is the ability to leverage off the infrastructure of the Carajás, major mining province of the world. Can you just talk us through that? Is there that ability to access infrastructure in that region to keep capital costs low and speed up the move into production, I guess?
Yeah, look, I think that's one thing that gets missed quite a lot. People talk about Brazil, and sometimes people consider Brazil a lot harder than Australia, and everyone gets used to what they're familiar with. But, you know, we are quite familiar with Brazil, and when you're in Brazil, the Carajás is probably no better place to be from a mining jurisdiction point of view. So, you know, Vale have been operating in that region for 30 or 40 years, probably 40 years now, and they've, you know, built very, very large mines. So you've got S11D, which is the, you know, very high grade, largest iron ore mine globally, you know, best quality material coming out. You've got the Salobo copper mine, which is, again, you know, very big IOCG deposit, probably second largest IOCG behind Olympic Dam globally. So, you know, that's a project that's, you know, 36 million tons. But with that investment that Vale's made, there's just a lot of infrastructure that's been put into the region. So, you know, you can fly into Carajás airstrip on a 737 jet. You've got a population in Parauapebas, which is the hub of the Carajás, of about 250,000 people. You've got sealed roads. You've got high voltage power lines. You've got plenty of water. So you are able to get a project up and running relatively easily, simply because you're in a part of the world where there is so much infrastructure. And I think that's going to have a huge impact on our ability to get Jaguar up and running. And, you know, I'm very confident that we'll be able to do that pretty seamlessly.
Permitting, what's that like in Brazil compared to Australia?
Well, I guess for now, like I've probably lost track of how you permit a project in Australia, but I guess just going by my only examples, as you know, when I was at Jindalby, we were trying to permit the Carrara iron ore project, and that probably took over 3 years to get permitted. So it's not easy in Australia, but in Brazil, I still think we're on a pretty clear path. We licensed our iron ore project and got that through to being development ready, where we could actually build the project. Our country manager in Brazil, Bruno Scarpelli, led the charge with that approval process. He's worked at Vale previously, where he's got approvals for Salobo and S11D. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got the right people. We understand the process. We deal with the environmental agency who have given us terms of reference. And it's really just it is a process. So, you know, we know everything that we've got to do. We don't see any impediments in the approval process, but it probably is still the time determining factor to getting the project up and running. So, you know, we spend a lot of time on it. We, you know, I guess risk manage around that and make sure that we're doing everything that we can to be able to get that approval process through in the shortest possible time.
Obvious question, of course, I should have asked is if you'll be producing concentrate, or will you be looking at some value-add options, downstream processing?
Yeah, look, I mean, the base case is definitely to produce a concentrate. We've done MET test work that shows that we can produce a really good concentrate, you know, nice iron MgO ratio, no arsenic, no other real nasties in the con, so we should be pretty comfortable to sell that. The deal that we did with Vale allows us to be able to sell product to them. And I think that they would be pretty comfortable buying that concentrate for their own smelters. But it doesn't preclude us from looking at value-add opportunities. And, you know, given the EV thematic right now, it does seem to make sense to have a look at going down that value path to either produce metal or sulfate. And you can do that with a pressure oxidation circuit. So part of our scoping study is to investigate the capital and operating costs of those value-adding steps. There's some pretty sensible reasons why we look at it. First and foremost being that power costs in Brazil are very competitive. So you're probably under 10 cents a kilowatt hour for US dollar power, which just means that you've got relatively low operating costs for running oxygen plants. You probably wouldn't have that opportunity in Australia, certainly in Western Australia where there's a lot of nickel, but there's also relatively high power costs. So, you know, we feel that there's some unique attributes to Brazil that make that value-adding opportunity a real one. And we'll do the work during the course of the scoping study to demonstrate what that looks like.
The cheaper power in Brazil, is that hydroelectric?
Yeah, predominantly. So, yeah, I think Brazil's power is about 80% renewables now, and I think hydro is probably up 65 or 70% of their overall power generation. So that's a positive. There's a grid system through the whole of the country. So, as I said, there's grid power that runs through that Carajás quite extensively. We've got a 138 kV line sort of running through Chucamá, which is the township where we base ourselves. It's about 35 kilometers from the project. And there's, you know, Vale also got, you know, big power system running into their Onça Puma ferronickel plant, which is only 15 kilometers away from the project. So, you know, plenty of power in the region, and, you know, very comfortable that we can access that.
And given the growth of ESG considerations around the world, the ability to produce quote unquote green nickel will hold you in good stead, I imagine.
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely a thematic that's coming through on the investment side. It's one of the, you know, for example, it's one of the key things that that Dundee looked at, you know, when they came and invested as to sort of what the project was going to look like and how we met sort of these sort of ESG investing principles. So we're doing a lot of work around that. But yeah, I mean, you're going to be producing a metal, you're going to be putting inert tailings potentially into a tailings dam. You've got hydro-generated power. So, yeah, like you're pretty much on a path where you're doing everything you possibly can to, I guess, maximise or I guess better way of putting it is to minimise your sort of impact on the globe.
Okay. Alrighty then. So if I could get you just to bring it all together and perhaps give investors a feel for what they should be looking out for in the next 3 to 6 months from the company and particularly Jaguar.
Yeah, look, I mean, so we've got ongoing drilling. Your readers or listeners probably would have seen that we've had some really nice drill holes. I think that's quite important that, you know, even after drilling 75,000 odd metres into the project already, we're still finding intersections which look like they're going to be the close to the best hole that we've seen on the project to date, and that includes Vale drilling. So I think the exploration upside as we drill deeper and step out further is still quite large. So we'll have, you know, obviously results from drilling through the next 12 months. We are going to take the drilling that we do now. We'll draw a line in the sand towards the end of December. We will do a resource upgrade, which will then facilitate us being able to put scoping study numbers into the market. So as I said, hopefully the resource comes through towards the end of January. And then be looking to sort of get the scoping study out come early March, late Feb. And, you know, the way we see it right now is that, you know, we would expect that we'll be rolling straight into pre-feasibility study. Like, you know, back of the envelope stuff says, you know, that this is a very good project. So we're sort of planning that we're going to be going through to those next phases. And then, you know, obviously there's the work that goes on with pre-feasibility study work. I think, you know, outside of that, there's a lot of other things going on as far as, you know, advancing your approvals and, you know, dealing with land access and all of that. In these, there's a lot of work that goes on in the background, and hopefully we can make some comment into the market about those things as we sort of tick some of those milestones. But I think broadly, back to your question, it's going to be more drill results, hopefully making new discoveries, finding new zones at depth, expanding the resource, and then been able to demonstrate the strong economics that we expect through the delivery of the scoping study.
Okay then. All right. So there we are, folks. Interesting mix there of continuing high-impact exploration, I guess, and a development story at the same time in a metal that the world's going to need a lot more of as the EV revolution and battery storage of renewable energy takes hold. So with that, I'm going to thank Darren for his time today and wish him all the best with the project. Good on you, Darren.
Yeah, thanks, Barry. Look, really appreciate the opportunity to have a chat. And for all the listeners out there who are shareholders, thanks for your support. And hopefully we have another really big year in 2021.